Off the ball.
Rugby.
You know, the overall sentiment is Ireland are nowhere near where they need to be.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Coigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look ahead all the action that happened over the weekend in the WSL. And of course, since we were last on, we finally know who we are going to be facing in League A of the Nations League in the hopes that we will qualify for the 2027 World Cup in Brazil. Joining me to look at this and all the other happenings in the world of football is Karen Duggan. Karen, how are things?
Things are good. Things are good. Apart from the rain and the dinner,
yeah. Apart from the fact that the weather is absolutely horrendous at the moment, things are excellent.
And things could have been a lot worse after that Nations League draw. So, right side.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been a lot worse. And that was essentially what Carla Ward said last week whenever she was reacting to it. She said, you know, we didn't want that group three, did we? So when we got group two, we were very happy. Group three was obviously the one that had Spain and England in it, which would have felt like a cruel, unusual punishment after the draw that we had last year when we were in Ligue 1. She said any group we are going to be in is going to be tough. We know that. But if you look at teams we can try and do something against and look at what our route is, the World Cup, then I think this is not the worst draw. Originally, I was thinking I wanted England. And even to be honest, this morning I was talking to my daughter on the school run and she was adamant we were getting England. Then I started to think maybe not, and we discussed who we might want, and I think this is certainly a better draw than England and Spain. And I think that was the general sense out of most Irish fans, that this was kind of the best draw, or maybe not the best best, but like not as bad as it could have potentially been.
I can't believe a thought crossed her mind that it would be a good thing to get England. England was really not enjoyable, so yeah. Like, I'm sure she was glass half full and was maybe like, we can go at them. No.
There was potentially a bit of her own patriotism in there and being like, oh, if we could get a result over England, that would be great, rather than the reality of what we would be facing.
I don't want any of her patriotism. Our patriotism is plenty. We've had enough of that fight in Irish and all that kind of crack. But yeah, the draw is good in terms of what it could have been. Obviously, you're looking at France and the Netherlands as the top two. But again, just going back to the Euros and looking at teams that didn't quite live up to the mark, you're thinking Netherlands were there, thereabouts. Now, they obviously had a really difficult group. France, amazing, blistering start and fell off a little bit. And obviously, we're going to cling on to those moments in Porquicuive, even though they played basically their second string team. That doesn't matter. There's a recent history of us getting results against France, and I'm still calling 2018 when we got that draw. I'm still calling that recent history. So in terms of approaching a game, yes, you can approach the Netherlands game and think you can get something out of it. And then you're earmarking Poland, really, aren't you, to say minimum 4 points?
Yeah.
Like they're ranked, what, one place ahead of us? And we've dropped recently, obviously, given our kind of iffy run of form and the sequence of teams we've had to play from League A then down to League B. So that is excellent. That's a hope giver. Whereas like you're looking at the Spain and England group and you're thinking, oh God, even though I would have loved to see in Spain.
I think if we had one of those teams, like if we had just Spain, it would have been fine, because I think we all were excited at the prospect of, you know, seeing those players light up a game that you would assume would probably be held at the Aviva, just with the level of calibre of player that would be coming in, unless Ireland wants to play it tactically and bring them to Tallinn, smaller ground. And
I'm an advocate of that, to be honest. Maybe like France, can we write off the France game and we can make an occasion of that maybe? Because if you're looking at France on paper, they're an excellent team. But in terms of Netherlands, Poland packing out a Thalys Stadium or bringing them somewhere else, I wouldn't see an issue with that. I think we can thrive under those conditions and the smaller stadium, smaller pitch, more enclosed. Good draw. Hopeful draw, I think.
A hopeful draw. Definitely not which the worst suffer, yeah. that we could have got. And I think that was what we will cling on to until
don't
those
get
games.
Me wrong, there is work to do. You know, we were blinded
you
by
mean,
the...
We're going to win all of the games, Karen. That is exactly what we're saying right now.
There's work to do. But yeah. Look, it's something to look forward to because off the back of the Belgium games, we've lost a bit of the trepidation that we had before those games. We put in a couple of good performances and we have the kind of fuzzy feeling that Carla is coming around to like playing to the squad strengths as opposed to her style of play. So in terms of learnings, we're on the right trajectory, but we're going to have to learn really quick because it's still Ligue 1. And
yeah.
we had a moment or two in Ligue 1 the last time, but now we need results. This is the path to the World Cup. It's really exciting.
Mm. Well, I think like it was interesting as well that she was saying, you know, second place. She was even mentioning the potential of second place as a potential and saying third at a minimum. And like, you definitely have to go into these tournaments looking at third as a minimum as what you want to achieve. But I thought it was interesting because normally we wouldn't have even have put probably second place in the general ether of these conversations. We would have just been like, beat Poland, maybe get a result off Netherlands, all going well, and be happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think her optimism is a good thing. I suppose we're not going in it with a defeatist attitude. But again, what we did against Belgium was we respected the fact that they are probably a superior team. Netherlands are still a superior team technically to us. So we need to be very tactically astute and we have time to analyze it now and look and take the good things from the Belgium games. We had a very bad half within that Belgium game. We need to analyze what happened there because we won't be given a second chance in the second half like we were in the Belgium game against the Netherlands or France or even Poland, I don't think. Because Poland will be looking at this group and saying the exact same things as us.
Yeah, 100%. And all those learnings are going to be crucial. If we could have two halves of, like, as in two-legged games, like the first one of the Belgian game, that would be nice and not give ourselves the stress that we did in that second leg.
Yeah,
as fun as it is to score a goal in the dying moments and have that moment of euphoria, I didn't want it for the rest of the game.
It was worth the other 8 minutes of...
So just looking at the other groups within Group A, so... In Group 1, you had Sweden, Italy, Denmark, Serbia. Group 2 is our group, so France, Netherlands, Poland, and ourselves. Then Group 3, Spain, England, Iceland, Ukraine. And Group 4, Germany, Norway, Austria, and Slovenia. So lots of exciting ties to come, and we'll, of course, be providing coverage over all of those. But for now, we're going to turn our attention to happenings at the weekend. And Karen, I feel like there's only one place to start, even though I want to ignore that it happened, absolutely. But that is Arsenal-Chelsea and the controversy.
What a game, though, eh? What a game.
It was an incredible game, to be fair. I actually didn't end up watching it live because I was at the rugby, but I was getting a lot of messages from people being like, this is an incredible game. Obviously, there was the issues with the refereeing. It just seemed like the sort of game that had all the best talking points of the weekend.
Best, and people are saying it was worst. I think it all contributed to good drama because I'm not a fan of either team. At the outcome of the draw, if you're on either side, you feel a little bit hard done by, maybe more so Arsenal, because the Blackstenius goal getting chalked off was a really, really poor decision. The potential offside for Russo's goal... It would have been very tight. I didn't get to see the lines drawn or anything like that on it. And Manham, again, I think she just went a step too early. What would have been the most dramatic finish to one of these games that we've ever seen. But look, cliche game of two halves. To say Chelsea came out of the traps firing was an understatement. The first, I know the goal was scored in the 9th minute, but up to that, you were like, this is coming. And then you expect Chelsea to turn the screw a little bit. But to be fair to Arsenal, they came back into it. Like I say, the first 10 minutes, like Kanra had hit the post in the 2nd minute, and you thought, this could be a long day, but you know, they worked their way back into it. They got some set pieces, balls in the box, and for as well as there being like great drama in the game, there was some really good defending. Some of the blocks and the bodies on the line stuff, I'm thinking of the bronze block from Russo, really, really crucial. Wubenmoy did
all the stuff.
She did all of the blocks, particularly the one from Captain twice in a row in the second half. So yeah, it was thrilling. There wasn't perfect. It wasn't like there was two games that were playing at their peaks. Like there were some really shaky moments, and Chelsea kind of self-inflicted them a little bit over playing at the back. Again, two teams that made more changes again. We spoke about it negatively for Arsenal previously, but they stuck with Russo and Blackstenius because they wanted to attack. I thought Pelova in midfield got overrun a little bit by Chelsea because they're just so strong. But then also Chelsea took out Carpenter, and she had been like their main threat in previous games. So, you know, all those changes, I'm sure there's justifications for them all. But again, it just gave us more and more talking points.
I thought it was kind of interesting, Sleggers talking about after the game, that she was like actually surprised at how Chelsea had turned up against them, and it made her rethink how she put out the Arsenal team. And generally, I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast before, I still don't feel like Sleggers knows what her best team is for playing against certain teams. So whenever I heard that, I was a bit like, doesn't fill me with a whole lot of hope. But I think, as you said, it wasn't two teams fully at their peak, but for once it kind of evened out between the two of them, because I think in recent seasons one team has really stepped into that gap and they have managed to push things forward, whereas I don't think, now maybe it would have changed a little bit had some of those goals been allowed that were disallowed, particularly the earlier one. Maybe that would have caused one or other of the teams to push on, but it did just feel like it was very open to either side. And
yeah, it was, like, even if you look at the stats of it, like the possession was pretty much 50-50. Arsenal had more shots, but you know, Chelsea had a similar amount on target as well. Like, it did look like Arsenal edged it, and particularly their second half performance was really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. They gave Chelsea a head start, and you can't do that. If they're going to turn the tide, you can't do that. But at the end of the day, Arsenal couldn't afford to lose, because it gave them absolutely no hope, and it also would have been like, God, we're way off Chelsea.
Yeah,
was the Champions League a one-off? Whereas now they're saying, no, we should have won that game. Let's use this as a launch pad. And also, they might slip up. They're not top of the league anymore. You know?
City are up there now. They're a point ahead on 21.
Yeah, so it gives everyone a little bit of impetus to say, we're still in this. Mm. And that's what Arsenal needed. They needed to not lose. They didn't lose. They'll feel hard done by. But having given Chelsea that start, and the fact that they could have been 2 or 3 down in the first 15 minutes, I think you take it. I do.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was interesting after the match as well that, and we've talked about this plenty of times on the pod, and we would generally say that, you know, education for referees is the thing that needs to be focused on first and foremost before trying to fit out every single stadium with VAR. Now, it's really frustrating when you watch a game like the weekend and you think about, especially if you're an Arsenal fan, how VAR could have changed the game. But also, if you don't have the people trained to use it in the first place and to use it right, then it's the same sort of stuff is going to happen, and it's going to be the same way we saw it come into the men's game, where there's been so many teething problems with it. Like, how many years is that in there now? And people are still giving off about it. Like, it's what, 5-6 years now at this stage? Longer than that? But I did think it was interesting that Bompaster agreed with Sleggers after the game about the introduction of it. Because I know there was a couple of things, like the corner should have been a free kick, but chances that might not have been checked are also kind of high. But it's just interesting getting two managers out the other side, where realistically that probably would have suited Arsenal better at the end of the game if it had been there.
Yeah, potentially it goes back to what I said at the start. I think both felt hard done by certain decisions. I think you're right. I think Arsenal can feel harder done by. There was only one howler, Right, I would say that the Blackstenius one was the only howler. The rest of it, without the grace of having replays or having VAR, they were very tight decisions. Maybe the corner if you're closer, but again, the line person could be at the other end. So yes to training, because we've consistently talked about the standard of refereeing needing to improve. That wasn't the worst refereeing performance we've ever seen. It was just because of the profile of the game, the packed out stadium, the eyes that were on this, the rivalry that's growing between these two, and just how much people are invested in it now. Like, people wouldn't have cared a few years ago. So it's amazing that we're having these conversations. And yes, it probably does need to go in, but we're a bit off that. You know, we need to get, they need, those attendances can't be the one-offs. You know, it needs to getting everyone to the bigger stadiums, getting everyone to be, to justify bringing in that level of technology and stuff like that. And while it's rapidly growing, we're not there yet. I think offside technology should, I don't know the ins and outs of it, because
you feel like it would be easier to,
you go to VAR, you're still asking for a lot of manpower there, whereas the offside technology, I guess it's an upfront investment in software, but yeah, I don't know which is easier to implement, but one or the other would be a massive progress. So I think it's kind of a watch this space one, but we're not there yet. But yeah, interesting that they but want it. I think on another day you change your mind on that. If you come out the other end, happy days.
Yeah, that's fair enough. We will go and then look to Man United then, who suffered their first Women's Super League defeat of the season, with Aston Villa managing to hold them off for a fair bit of the game, to make sure that they were able to get the points. Mary Taylor getting the first half goal there around the 35th minute. That was a bit of a tongue twister for me there, with a nice little volley. What were your thoughts after this? Because I feel like you've been waiting for this moment to come a little bit.
Look, there is an inevitability about Man United that's not there about your Chelsea, and that is them messing up against a team that they shouldn't. And that's what happened at the weekend. And that's not to take away from Villa, who got their stuff together a little bit better defensively up until this game. I feel like Villa they were letting themselves down defensively. They weren't doing the basics right. But despite all the possession that Man United had, they didn't have any cutting edge. You couldn't say there was huge clear-cut chances. Maybe the Williams header at the end, you would expect her to score that, because we've seen her do it in so many occasions. But on the flip side of that, Missy Bokerns had the most shots. She was clean through on goal, only for a Miyazawa timed a tackle at the edge of the box, like nothing I've ever seen before. It was unbelievable. It's not to say that Man United deserved to lose and Villa absolutely deserved to win it, but Man United didn't deserve to win it. And I think Mark Skinner kind of acknowledged that. He said that they lacked detail and quality. And it's a big blow. I mean, they were kind of riding a wave there now. And look, you lose to Villa and they have to go up against PSG now midweek. That could be humbling. You never know how that's going to go, but it could be. And then all of a sudden you've gone from undefeated to 2 in a week. And how does that affect the changing room? Because it looks like the changing room is brilliant and it's all together and it's this and it's that. But at the end of the day, the quality needs to shine through. And that game, they didn't show enough quality. They just looked lackluster. They really did. Just didn't have that edge. And the last couple of games, Letizia being a little bit uncharacteristic and just getting caught a little bit, just things we're not used to seeing. And Villa set up defensively against Man United. Man United, we know, are a brilliant counter-attacking team. But that, like I said, they went back to basics, and Anna Patton definitely had her best game of, you know, of the season that we've seen so far. So if Man United are going to become a top team, teams are going to set up against them, and they are going to have to find a way around that. So again, is it squad depth? Is it just trying new things on the training pitch? It's not all doom and gloom. They're still ahead of Arsenal in the league. They're still third place. You probably would have taken that. They're 4 points off the lead. But if that grows any bigger, then they're starting to look behind them and see these Champions League places are, they're up for grabs, you know? It's
Well, I
people.
think the thing that we've seen in previous seasons is that lackluster element, and it felt like a bit of a harp back to that. And obviously, you know, all teams hit a bit of a patch at different moments of a season, so maybe this is just that one for them. But you would really hope, for the sake of the race for the Champions League places, that they manage to keep
Stay involved,
things
yeah.
together and stay involved. And whether that's, you know, some additional signings in January just to secure the base a little bit more. But again, as well, I suppose you have to look at Villa, and, you know, they got that point against Arsenal in September. Really, like, strong, gritty, just like doing what they need to do display. So this is a team that are capable, even despite where they've been in the table so far this season. This is a team that are able to get these results against the top tier teams. And, like, kind of watching it back, I was like, they almost could have scored a couple of goals and had it as like a bit more of a bigger margin than what actually ended up happening. And I think Iroh in there has been really interesting. Like, their comments after the game saying, people don't expect these sort of results from us, but we know we have them in us, and we've proven we have them in us. It's potentially the teams that are around our own sort of capabilities at the moment that we need to watch out for more.
Yeah, and I think she came across really well in her interview. I think she showed a lot of passion on the sideline. I think, again, confidence in the team, saying that they can get results like this, and it's just to get it more consistently. And she didn't start Rachel Daly. Like, she's obviously willing to make big decisions, but if you look at their bench, they're also quite limited as well. They're two teams who, you know, if they want to get to the next step, need a little bit of investment, but they seem to have a good manager behind them, and it's just turning those draws into wins. Some of those draws just have felt a bit like of a damp squib, like they never really laid a glove on people, whereas the way that they defended and countered against Man United was really, really effective. So again, it could be a way forward for Villa, because all of a sudden you get a win like that and they've gone to seventh in the table, you know.
Yeah.
They could use that game, then they're back down in amongst the Leicesters and the Evertons, and that's not where they should be.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn our attention to another big scalp of the weekend, which was London City Lionesses 4, Tottenham 2. Just when we thought Ho had brought a change to Tottenham and we were going to see them start to challenge this season or start growing, London City come and they lay down an absolute marker in a game that probably they've already had their three wins, which we've praised, but it's been three teams that are pretty much rooted to the bottom of the table. This feels like we're here for the season, we're here for next season, we're not just a participation team sort of result for them.
Yeah, this wasn't Spurs being Spursy, I didn't think. I thought that, like, it was quite an open game, but it played some really, really good stuff. London City, I think they get a lot of joy and will cause a lot of problems from the set pieces. I think Aslani's delivery is really, really good. And then you've got people just who are willing to put their bodies on the line. Like, Nikita Paris's goal was a brilliant move. Like, just
in her 200th WSL appearance as well. Like, that is insane sort of stats.
Yeah, it was so good. But, like, yeah, that's probably not talked about enough. 200 WSL appearances and still going. It's almost like she started like a house on fire and then maybe had a lull. We're kind of like, where is she going? And then she's rejuvenated again. And it's great to see. But that goal, like, Giora won it nearly at the edge of her box, linked up with Aslani. Godfrey, who had the game of her life, then put in just a brilliant cross. And Paris was braver than the Spurs defender and got across it, and that made it 2-1. But then Spurs came back. They showed resilience that, again, is good to see from them. Sensational goal from Suneman, top corner, like, mm-hmm. Sensational. But then London City had the answer again, you know, Aslani cross, flick on from Sangari. Obviously, they got the look with the OG, but sometimes they earn your look. I thought they earned their look. I thought they played really well. And again, the fourth goal, Godfrey's second, like talk about playing with confidence. I think you get that from playing with the likes of Gioro and Aslani and winning those few games that have get you up the table. But step over with her right, cuts in, bends it into the corner with her left. Like she's not even left footed, but when you're playing with confidence, unreal. And we saw Rolfo do it a little bit in the Man United game, but she didn't have the finish with her right foot. So sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't, depends on how the game is going, where the confidence level is. But again, like you say, I think London City Lioness is laying down a little bit of a we are here, the investment is working, and they can play. They make too many mistakes, they give away way too many penalties, they give away another penalty this week.
I think, yeah, they're definitely their discipline needs to improve a little bit. And I don't know, is that they lose their heads a little bit at certain moments, or
I think some of their defenders are rash. I think the next port of call is maybe a calming presence in that back line. or maybe it's goalkeeper, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think that in terms of their disciplinary record, I'd actually like to look it up because we always seem to be talking about a penalty that they've conceded.
Yeah, it's pretty poor. I remember, I haven't looked it up like as recently as this game, but I remember looking it up for a previous one and it was kind of not, I think it was like one of the worst in the league in general. Maybe West Ham had a slightly worse one, or Liverpool. Just
looking at the fouls here, even like 13 fouls to 6.
Yeah.
A couple of them in the box. You're
not great.
These are our good crack team now this year, I think.
Yeah, no, I think they are. And I think it's interesting.
They got bashed at the start and now they're starting to, they're still like, well, we're
good. But I think even at the start, like it didn't take us that long to see that there was some potential there. And I think also considering how awful Liverpool and West Ham have been this season, it became very obvious very quickly that, oh, we might not actually have to fight for survival for this whole thing. We just need like one or two good results. And now they've racked up 4 wins, you know, that essentially could mean that they're safe now for the season, depending if, so long as they don't have a massive drop off and the other two don't have a massive resurgence.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they weren't safe.
There was a good,
what they've shown, it's not even taken away how poor the others have been. I think they've shown enough, and I think they're the one team that will always make use of a transfer window.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. BBC had this stat and it's best performing promoted sides after 8 games. And United in 2019-2020 were on 12 points at this stage. City in 2014, when they were promoted, were on 12 points at this stage. And London City are on 12 points at this stage. And that secured all of them in the league. Even Spurs, if you look at 2019-20, 10 points. So like, you know, they're in and around that safe zone. The outlier there is Sunderland in 2015 on 15 points, which is obviously a massive gap. But I would say that
What's positive about that is you're looking at all those other teams and they've been mainstays in the WSL since.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not just about the bounce and having one good year and then go on again. They can look around and say, we're achieving what other people are achieving. Man United now, a couple of years on from that, are competing Champions League, should be doing more. Probably don't have the backing. So it'd be just interesting to see if the backing correlates.
Well, I was going to say, despite being the only team that aren't actually affiliated to a men's team in the league, with the people that are at the helm of the club, there's a strong argument there to say that they potentially will get the investment a lot quicker. Maybe United will over the coming years, depending on the successes that they get.
They won't. But yeah, look, it's not the blueprint for what we thought would work in the WSL in terms of the top teams and the investment and being dependent on their male counterparts. It breaks away from that, and I think that's kind of part of their brand as well. And it's a really interesting project, and I think we'll look forward to seeing where it goes over the next few years.
Okay, we'll look to the bottom of the table then before we go back to the top again. And Liverpool and West Ham picking up their first points of the season. Can we get a round of applause, please?
No, we can't.
And the reason I bring these two games together is because neither of them were massively inspiring in terms of results, both 1-1 results. good to see Liverpool and West Ham finally getting some points on the board, but you wouldn't say it's necessarily the start of a revolution for either.
No. Again, quite even games. The draws were probably fair results on the grand scheme of things, but particularly for West Ham, they would have liked to have dragged Leicester into the battle with them. Liverpool, I think they played some good stuff, but I think they also got a bit lucky that Brighton were a little bit off it. When Brighton played and had their purple patches, you can tell that Brighton are levels above where Liverpool are at the moment, and Liverpool are still falling into traps of overplaying in midfield when they actually look best is when they break and get the ball wide, which is what happened for their goal. You know, it was Kerr, first time ball to Woodham, first time cross into the box. Bit of luck in that. I think Ndozi should have done better in the goal for the Liverpool. Mm-hmm. But you thought then, oh, Liverpool are going to have the look of the green. It's going to happen here. This is what they're going to... And they grew into it a little bit after that. Kirby had to have an excellent game. That's the first time again I've seen her really commanding. I think her team needed that. Really brilliant goal line clearance from Shinizu. But then Kafaji off the bench to break their hearts in the 93rd, 94th
minute. It was so late.
It was so late, but it was a good move as well. You know, like, again, it had been coming and Kirby was standing up and people were putting their bodies on the line. You'd say, God, they worked for their win if they had come. But on the flip side, Brighton probably did deserve it when they came. Like, if you look at the shots, Liverpool just shaded it. They had 12, Brighton had 11, but Liverpool had 4 on target and some of them were harmless and Brighton had 7. So that kind of tells that they were creating better chances. They were forcing saves from Kirby. Kirby had one of those games. So as disappointed as they'll be for it to be 93rd minute, and it never feels like it, it's kind of a point gained.
Yeah, I know. I did feel sorry for them, I have to say, like with the fashion that it happened, because it's never how you want a game to go. But yeah. Well, look at the positives.
Much difference in the other game. I mean, how long was Martinez waiting for a goal? You could tell how much it meant for her. We were bigging her up so much last season. Mm. And then 97th minute. So it could be worse than 93rd minute winner. It could have gotten never draw. 97th minute one is even worse.
I think what we've learned, Karen, is we just don't big anyone up in any season before something.
I don't think we'll be bigging too many more West Ham or Liverpool up. Maybe they will. Everton need to be careful as well. No, we'll get onto that now. But there's a lot of red coming on the board recently for them as well. And as much as they're a bit like Leicester, where they keep themselves in the game, they're going to start converting those into points if they don't want to get dragged. Because, see, a win for Liverpool or West Ham really has them breathing down Everton's necks.
Yeah, well, they're only, I think, 4 points ahead now of the others. And, I mean, not to say that this is a correlation, but since Courtney has been injured, things have started to go downhill for Everton. Although you have to say, to be fair, in this game, again, I know it was like the 55th minute or whatever that City got their second goal, but it wasn't an easy win for them at all. And like, Everton did put in a decent defensive performance. Obviously, they got the goal through Gago after Medima scored her 90th WSL goal, another massive milestone hit at the weekend. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. They have to be careful. They could very easily start slipping and be in the same position that they were Christmas last year, where things were looking dire enough for them.
Yeah. The beacon of hope there is that Gago looks to be hitting form. You know, she forced a really good save from Yamashita from a header that was... she had no right to get that much power on. And she got the audacious flick for the goal. You know, it was brilliant, you know. So if she can play with confidence and they can start creating a few more chances, even if they're through set pieces, you know, that's kind of all it takes to if you have her and you have a firing goalkeeper, we've seen that that has kept Leicester up in the past and probably Everton as well. In terms of this City win, though, and in fairness to Everton again, they were undone by two very good goals. I would say that Miedema's goal, you know, that ball into her by Benny, you know, Benny just kind of shrugged into the middle and split the defence, and you can talk about them being square, you can talk about them not being cohesive, but I think it was just a really good ball. Miedema showed her strength, had a really good finish, and she'd be delighted with that. She had another chance later in the game with her left foot that she blasted over, and again Bunny Shaw had a header put on her head by Miedema after she did some brilliant work one-on-one, and Bunny Shaw missed it, but then inevitably she then scored. So yeah, I think, look, City were worth their win because they created really good chances. They play some really nice stuff. But yeah, you have to give credit to Everton, I guess, for staying in it. And I think they can take positives from it. But yeah. Yeah, I have to be careful.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see. I mean, at least this adds a bit of jeopardy into the title race. It's nice to see, even if it has to be Man City, it is nice to see someone else at the top of that table.
Well, what I'd say about Man City is that they are enjoyable to watch at times.
Yeah.
Of Chelsea because, you know, they do the job, they get it done, but like some of the play that City do is really, really exciting stuff. So as much as a Man United fan don't want them to be up there, again, when we're doing the analysis, they're good to watch.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. And I feel like they're leaning into it more and more this season compared to how they were last season, which is nice. And it is nice to see as well Bunny Shaw getting a goal, considering everything that's going on at home for her. I imagine it's been a stressful enough time with the hurricane that hit.
Yeah, she's joined top scorer now again. Yeah. You know, and keeping her fit again, like last season, that was almost City's downfall. Keeping her fit and keeping Miedema fit and looking at that partnership, you know, why wouldn't you think that they could compete with Chelsea given the firepower that they have?
Yeah. Well, another exciting weekend of WSL action. We are recording this on a Tuesday evening, so by the time this is up, Chelsea will likely have played St Poulton. But if you are looking for some things to watch tomorrow evening, Arsenal are playing Bayern Munich, which should be a very interesting game considering the battles that they have had over the year. That's a 5:45. And then Man United are facing PSG in what could be a statement game for them at 8:00.
Turn up Mary Earps. Wonder if she signed some copies of her book for the girl.
Leaving them in the dressing room for everyone. Oh God. Poor Mary Earps. I do feel sorry for her, I have to say, after everything. But yeah, that's all from us for this week. The Koi Gig Pod is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Karen, thank you very much as always. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will chat to you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.